Hi everyone, good afternoon. We're really excited that you're able to join us for this panel discussion. We have three really accomplished and passionate panelists. I'm going to start by introducing myself and letting them introduce themselves. My name is Malvika Rivari. I work in office marketing and I focus on accessibility. Some of you might have joined the session yesterday on Office 365 accessibility, and if you couldn't, I really encourage you to watch the replay at 4 p.m. today. This conversation is not about Microsoft accessibility, but it's about customers and strategies that they are adopting to make their workplaces more inclusive. Strategies that I hope you will find useful in your organizations as you embark on your accessibility journey. To kick us off, I'd like Pat to introduce himself.
Thank you very much. My name is Pat Sheehan. I am from the Department of Veterans Affairs. I work as the Section 508 coordinator for the department, and I am the director of the Section 508 office within the Department of Veterans Affairs. We have a very large agency of 350,000 people in our organization, and we serve the veteran. We have 22 million veterans and about 4 million veterans that we serve, and those are our primary customers.
Next, we have Jeff.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Bishop, and I work at the University of Arizona as an IT accessibility analyst. And we serve approximately 2,300 to 2,400 students, faculty, and staff who may have a disability. My career, I've worked as a developer and worked in the IT industry for over 30 years, and so bring lots of experience in the IT space, both in education as well as in corporate space. Our university strives to be a very inclusive environment for everyone that we serve, because everyone is our customer, and we'll be talking a lot about that today.
And last but not the least, we have Lauren.
My name is Lauren Pittman. I am a special ed teacher just 45 minutes up the road in Cherokee County Schools. We're a very large district. We have 7 high schools, 12 middle schools, and 28 elementary schools. I work mainly with our special ed department, not only my school, but the schools in the area for accessibility for students.
So the structure of this panel discussion will be, I will ask them 3 questions, and they'll each answer, and then we'll leave time for you to ask them more questions. My first question to them would be, what strategies do their organizations adopt to become more inclusive? So Pat?
Thank you very much. I think the strategy starts from the top, and at the Department of Veterans Affairs, the secretary and of course the CIO who I work for want to put veterans first. It's a veteran-focused organization, the Department of Veterans Affairs. We're there to serve veterans. We also have 59,000 people with disabilities that work for the department, and we have over 28,000 that have targeted disabilities. So we're very large, and our job is to implement accessibility throughout the department so that the veterans whom we serve have access to products that are accessible and usable by the veterans. We put that strategy in everything that we develop when we're using the IT strategy, the Agile strategy that we have. We incorporate accessibility at the same level as we do security and privacy. So it's baked into everything that we do, and it becomes part of the way we do business at the department.
Others can chime in as well. Let's keep this flowing like a conversation.
Well, from the education standpoint, our district adopted the strategy to start with students first and see what was really going to be accessible, what was going to be ease of use for our students, and then we pulled back for our district. I think something in education that happens a lot is people want to start with, this is really great, but how is it going to affect your students? So for education, and when you're talking about accessibility, you really have to be student-centered, and you also have to make sure that leadership is on the same page, knowing that this is what we're going to use district-wide. It's hard to be accessible in education if each individual school or each individual district is doing their own thing. So the problem is we have students that are transient. So when they go from here to here to here, their accessibility and ease of access is not the same. So we look at a student-centered point of view rather than a product point of view.
Anything to add, Jeff?
Yeah, so at the University of Arizona, we strive to really make accessibility a core focus across the university. It really started with the CIO and filtered down throughout the organization. So in our department that I serve in, we work with students to ensure that material at an academic level is accessible throughout accommodations, either by getting material from publishers or producing that material in accessible format for them. And in my role as an IT accessibility analyst, I work across the university to ensure that things that are purchased or things that are developed on campus by our software developers that serve in the university, because we don't really have centralized IT in our environment, so we have lots of different developers across our campus. So it's really important to engage them to ensure that products, tools, and services, and websites, and website applications are accessible for everyone, both faculty, students, and staff.
To build on this, I wanted to make you aware that recently Forrester did a study out of Europe, sponsored by Microsoft, where they studied organizations and the strategies they're adopting to boost accessibility programmatically. And some of these themes you're hearing from Pat, Jeff, and Lauren were reinforced in this study, where Forrester found that organizations that are able to get executive buy-in, that are able to show some quick wins, showcase impact on human beings, that are able to partner with each other and partner with vendors, as well as learn from each other and have strong procurement policies, they were able to succeed in implementing accessibility programmatically. And here today, we'll hear some more specific examples about each of these. So the next question to you would be, what impact have you seen in your organization, on your customers, employees, when you've started implementing an accessibility strategy?
Well, in our university, we really work hard on making sure that accessibility is really part of our culture. We have blind faculty members, and in my prior role at the university, I worked on our learning management system. And when I left that team, a new tool was developed. It was a course site request tool. And the tool was developed so to be used in a way that was very visual. You know, you'd click and drag things around to be able to create, you know, course sites for specific academic courses. And this, because it didn't have keyboard access and it didn't work well with screen readers, was not that accessible. So an example of the work that we do is we worked with the developers in our IT team at the university, and we talked to them about the proper way to implement accessibility and the way to actually make that more accessible. And it turned out that implementing this change was actually quite beneficial for everyone, because it was a lot easier for people on mobile devices to be able to use the tool, and it really offered another way of engagement for, you know, everyone, not just those with disabilities. So it was a win-win for everybody.
I get to see it every day with my students. And what we did was used our Office 365 suite, which OneNote is a part of. And a lot of people don't know that OneNote came out with a product called the Learning Tools. And the Learning Tools is an accessibility for students with dyslexia, with visual impairment, or even I've had it help my ADHD students. But the impact when you allow accessibility in the classroom can change students' lives. I have a dyslexic student who, when he came to me last year, could only functionally read 3 words per minute. Through the use of accessible tools and the learning tools and OneNote and things of that nature, he's now up to 35 words per minute. That's what accessibility does for students. It allows them to access their education in a way that they never have been able to before. A lot of times what happens with special education students is there's no way for them to be independent. They're completely reliable on you as the teacher. They struggle to read directions. I have a student who struggles to still identify the word name, where he's supposed to write his name. But if we allow them access to technology that is useful and it's relevant to them, they're able to leverage that for their own independence. They're able to access their education on their own. And then I know as the teacher that this tool is going to be able to follow them from elementary to middle to high school. I no longer have to worry about, well, we have it just in this building, but when he goes to middle school, what's going to happen? So having those tools available to them, you're letting them access something that they've never been capable of before.
And at the department, we have taken our strategy and we work it from right from procurement to make sure that what we're putting together, what we're buying, has accessibility built into it. So we're holding the requiring officials, the contracting people, accountable for accessibility. When products come in that we're working with, we then work with our project managers to incorporate, make sure accessibility is incorporated into the projects that they're working on. So we assign a team of experts, accessibility experts, to assist those project managers and developers to ensure that they are utilizing the tools properly, understand what we mean by accessibility. We don't just throw accessibility at them and expect them to learn it, but we also assist them with training, with tools, with support, and subject matter experts to make it happen. And then at the end of the development process, we have another team that will go in and check the work of the developers and project managers to ensure that accessibility has been baked into the product right from the beginning. And that is particularly critical. Although accessibility is a requirement, just like privacy and security that comes out of all the products at the VA, we also wanted to ensure that accessibility is what's being delivered. And so we have a team at the end that can ensure that, and if there are any issues or anomalies, we will work with the developers to ensure that the next version of that product is going to meet accessibility standards.
And we do similar things at the university, but we start also at the purchasing level, and even prior to that, during the RFP process, where we ask very specific questions of the vendors during the RFP process. We ask them, what and how have you ensured that your products or software is accessible? What tools did you use, and what versions of those tools did you use to ensure compliance and accessibility of your product? And then we request a VPAT. You know, a volunteer product accessibility template. It's a pretty industry standard template that's used to document the accessibility of product. And then we actually don't necessarily trust what they tell us. We verify it. So we ask for access to the site or the software that we will be purchasing, and we go and test it. And we verify that, yes, you told us that it's accessible, and we agree with you, yes, it's accessible. If we find that it's not, then we'll work with the vendor, either prior to purchase or in contract language, to ensure that accessibility is a key factor in the implementation and in the ongoing partnership. Because really that's what's most important, is that when you're working with vendors, that you really consider them a partner of your organization when it comes to accessibility and usability of the software and technology that you purchase.
When you think about advocating for accessibility within your orgs, getting that executive buy-in, how do you convince others in your orgs to advocate as well? Or have you faced challenges trying to get others to advocate? What do you do to overcome those challenges?
I think the key thing is to educate people within your environment, to train them about what accessibility and usability really means. So at the university, what we do is we will go out and we will talk to developers and people who develop content, and we'll even talk to, you know, people that send out emails. You know, it, it, p- people who, you know, administrative assistants, things like that. Because, you know, email communication, that happens a lot, and it needs to be accessible. I can remember when sometimes in our university environment, we would get emails that were sent out pretty widespread, and they would be, you know, not accessible. For example, newsletters is a really good example of that. So we would go to that department and we would say, look, you know, we would like to talk to you about how you can be more inclusive in the way that you produce your newsletters. And they're really, really happy to hear this, because they just don't know. They just don't know. And then, you know, once they're educated about it and they're doing, you know, their newsletters to be more inclusive, then everyone can read them, whether you're reading them with a screen reader or if you're reading them on your mobile device where you may not be downloading pictures when you're sitting on a bus, you know, or sitting in the park with your kids.
I think when you're talking about education, your superintendent or your state board has to have the buy-in that accessibility is the first and most key component to anything that we're going to do. We are in an educational society now where there are more identified special ed students than there are general education students. The landscape has changed. You can no longer just assume that special education is this tiny little portion of your population. That's not how it works anymore. And in order for you to have top-down responsibility and accountability, the teachers themselves also have to understand what it means to advocate for accessibility. A lot of people don't understand what that term means. All they think is, oh, this is going to be a lot of work, so I've already tapped out. If you approach it from the standpoint of, this is relevant to your student's success, that's where you're going to get the buy-in. You have to have a human factor to accessibility. Accessibility is a human factor. You can't just say, oh, we're going to have this available for you because, you know, such and such and such. Think about the person that you're advocating for. I mean, there is always an emotional buy-in with accessibility. These are people who rely on these tools for their everyday life. And if you can't put a human element into it, then the accessibility portion doesn't really matter. It won't have any relevance to anyone.
And we have access, we have access needs, particularly for our disabled veterans that have come back from the wars. They want access to their health records. They want access to their benefits. So ensuring that what we're developing and what we're working on is critical to the veterans. We have veteran service organizations, and many times our department goes out and will talk to the veteran service organizations to find out what they think about these products. Are these products accessible? Benefits products, health products, are they accessible? And many times the veterans will come back and say they may be accessible, but we'd like them to be simpler so we can use them. So usability is a critical factor. Behind everything that we are developing, whether it's websites or PDF documents, web-based applications, there is a constituent, whether it's a disabled VA employee who is using that, or whether it's a veteran or a disabled veteran. It's important for us to be able to keep that in mind to ensure that what we're developing and building and or maintaining can meet the needs of that disability group. And it's not that difficult. One of the things that I think that we found within the federal government is that there is an awful lot of expertise. We have expertise up front here that we're happy to share with you. Within the federal government, there is an awful lot of expertise as far as checklists and strategies for implementing that within your organization. So I think one of the strategies that we want to put forward is you don't have to start from scratch. A lot of the accessibility work that has been done at universities in the federal government, within the commercial vendors, they have an awful lot of experience, and we're happy to be able to share that with you, whether it's procurement strategies or how do you implement something like this in an agile environment, or what do you use for test tools and which ones are usable, what strategies should I use, that sort of thing. We can share that with you, and we're happy to.
I think that's a great segue to hear. What would you guys like to hear? What challenges do you face in your organization? It's a question for the audience. Where do you want to take this conversation? Any brave people want to come up to the mic and ask a question? Okay. I actually have another question for you all. What specific resources do you recommend someone new to this field leverage? Maybe free resources or someone new to advocating for accessibility, whether it's conferences, newsletters, where do you recommend people get started?
Well, I think there's a lot of information out there, but when you're looking for, if you're gonna purchase a product, think about the people that come with your product. If you're purchasing a product and the team behind it are not invested in helping to make it successful for your students, your work peers, whatever it is that you're doing, then you're never gonna find any success with that technology. You have to also have buy-in. It's easier for an entire district to have buy-in to one accessible tool so that you know that as students move around the county, that they'll be able to have access to it. We have students in our county, we're just 45 minutes up the road. They'll spend 6 weeks in one school and then they get evicted and then they send 6 weeks in another and 6 weeks in another and 3 months later they come back to us. I know that in my district, because we use Office 365, that the accessibility tools will be there for them no matter where they go in the county. Now, I cannot guarantee that for when they go out of the county, but you have to really think about what you're purchasing too. I mean, I call it the educational Kool-Aid. There is so much cool stuff, but is it relevant to your students? Is it accessible to your students? A lot of the times people see these grandiose programs and they look great and they've got all these cool features, but what about the visually impaired student? Are they going to be able to access it? You have to really think about your entire population and center it first on your students and then push it out to everybody else.
This is great because this kind of feeds exactly into how you want to handle your projects too. Think about your specific need within your organization. All of you are doing things in different spaces, you know, and first reach out to your peers and find out, what are you doing to solve accessibility for your product? Whether you're in a manufacturing company or you're a technology company or you're a multimedia company, it doesn't really matter. The principles are really the same. So the first thing is reach out to your peers. Then reach out and talk to them about the technologies that you use as part of your business. If you're talking about web accessibility, there's lots of great resources out there. My favorite one is webaim.org. It's a really great resource that has lots of great content on lots of different key areas, and including just basic HTML accessibility and ARIA to develop really rich internet-based applications to make them really accessible. That's how Office 365 on the web is doing a lot of their work. And there's other resources as well. Email lists and discussion forums are really key. And there's forums within the education space as well as others. So I think the key principle, though, is reaching out to your peers and finding out what is vital to your organization to make things more accessible for you. And looking at the toolkits and development strategies that you're using from a technology perspective to meet the needs both from a testing and verification standpoint as well as a development strategy.
And I would say, to add on to what Jeff just said, I think utilizing people with disabilities within your organization. If you have people with disabilities, engage them, talk to them, find out how do they do what they do. Talk to them about how they access the information that they need, whether they're using Office products, whether they're using the web, whether they're going mobile. And the other thing that I would encourage is form partnerships. You have a disability community out there who has lots of expertise, whether it's blindness organizations that I belong to and Jeff belongs to, or you have other service organizations out there. There is a world of expertise out there so that you don't have to go it alone and learn. You can learn from people that have been doing this now for 10, 15, 20 years. We've learned from experience what works, what doesn't work, what the good products are. And I think one of the things that has been talked about here is engaging with companies who are going to not only sell you a product, but stand behind that product, ensure that that product has accessibility built in from the ground up, and learn and will teach and support and teach you how to use that. And then turning to disability-based organizations to say, and what have you learned about this, and what are your needs, and what are your successes?
And it doesn't stop after you complete your project. It's an ongoing process. You know, Pat and I belong to, and we serve on the board of the American Council of the Blind. And we have been working with Microsoft, providing them lots of great feedback about all of their products, both on the Windows space, as well as Office 365 and other products. In fact, ACB is working right now on implementing Office 365, and we have a number of people who are blind or visually impaired within our organization that work in our offices, and we're putting them right at front, at first release, so that they're going to be truly eating Microsoft's dog food to really ensure that products and services remain accessible to be able to allow them to be successful in their work. So as you've completed a project, as you completed something, don't stop there. Always seek out feedback and work with your vendors or work with your developers to ensure that future versions of product and that they remain accessible. Sometimes what will happen is a new version of something will come out and you may take a couple of steps backwards. And you don't want that to happen. So always try to make sure that your development best practices have accessibility in mind and that you verify them by testing, both automated as well as manual testing with accessibility experts.
An interesting thing I learned this morning from talking to these panelists is that accessibility isn't a binary thing. It's not a yes or a no. And there's nothing as out there that's 100% accessible. And in that kind of scenario, I think Pat, you were the one who said this. How do you approach accessibility when nothing out there is 100% accessible?
Gaining accessibility is a process. You want to get as much accessibility as you possibly can built in right from the beginning. It's not a strategy that you bolt on at the end. You bake in accessibility at the beginning of the phase, whether we start with procurement, then you design it into the product. You bring people into the process, as Jeff and Lauren have said, that knows something about accessibility. You give them the tools, the strategy to make it work, and then you test and verify at the end. The goal of the accessibility is to empower the people, all your people, people who are disabled and people who are non-disabled. One of the things we find out is that when you build access into a product, it just makes the product all that much better. Whether you're going to be using a mouse or the keyboard or whatever, you've built in a variety of ways that people can use to do the job and become successful. That is a good product, and that's success.
You know, we've been talking a lot about making sure that we do things right from the beginning, but let's briefly talk about, well, what do I do if I have a really large application that I've already deployed? Well, remember, you can't eat an elephant all at once. So if this has happened and you need to improve the usability and accessibility of your product, start with the key things that you can do first to get the best bang for your buck. For example, one of the things that we'll tell people at our university is, if you just add alt attributes to things, that will go a long, long way to improving the accessibility of your site. So don't think that all hope is lost if you've already deployed something and it's not necessarily accessible. It's all in the way that you handle it going forward. There will be a version 2, there will be a version 3. So start putting best practices in place as soon as you can and work toward making your products truly more inclusive.
That's what's so interesting about this space. It's not just about the product developers or designers or the website developers. It also applies to all of us in the audience who send emails or make newsletters or make presentations. If we don't put in the effort to make our presentations accessible, like Jeff mentioned, I made this presentation and I shared it with him and he uses a screen reader. So I have to put thought into making sure that the presentation I shared with him can actually be read by a screen reader. I have images in this deck, I have boxes flying around. So I had to make sure that I'm aware of how to make a presentation accessible. And that's something I think teachers, employees, everyone needs to think a little bit about. So how do you approach that? How do you make everyone aware that they need to take action to make content accessible?
Well, we do that at the university at all levels, but really we focus a lot on faculty. And we talk to them about, you know, when you're putting up those PowerPoint presentations, you really want to make sure that they're accessible so that everyone can read them. So we'll train them and we'll hold workshops and talk about the best ways to do that. We'll talk about, you know, if you're creating a PDF document, please don't scan it and just put up an image of a book or an image of an article. And we talk to them about strategies to make sure that their PDF documents or Word documents or PowerPoints are accessible. Because then when they put them up on our learning management system, then they work well for everybody, whether you have a disability or not. You know, they work great on mobile devices, and they just really work well for everybody.
And we will actually bring in a core group of teachers per school. So there's a set of 5 teachers in every building that have been trained and they have used and they have tested all of these accessibility products. And then so what happens is they can then within their school be the accessibility leader. There's someone physically in the building that can say, yes, I can help you make this accessible. Yes, I know how to fix this. Instead of having to wait for somebody at the county office to read the 300 emails in their inbox, there's somebody available right there, right then that can help you. And they're regular classroom teachers. These are not support staff. These are special education teachers, general education teachers. We even have our specials teachers, which is PE, art, and music. One of the specials department has to be trained in accessibility as well, because it's not necessarily just accessibility when talking about screen reading and things. You also think about accessibility for getting down the hallway. How do I participate in PE? How am I supposed to be in music class? Things like that. So if there's somebody in the building that can be a resource right then and there, it helps make your accessibility relevant and quick.
And I would say, sort of to wrap up this section, accessibility and usability matters. We had an issue come up about a month ago in which we have a blind veteran who was using the veteran crisis line. There was a portion of that crisis line that didn't work for that veteran. And it was a situation where we went in and discovered that after we got word from the disabled veteran that he couldn't use the chat feature. So we were able to go into this application, find out where the issues were, and develop a patch to be able to fix that. Being able to use something like the veteran crisis line is critically important for the disabled veterans we serve. And so making sure that is accessible and usable. It was a small feature that the third-party vendor had not known was an issue. As soon as we brought it to their attention, they went in and fixed it, not only in this instance, but in several other applications that were being used by this vendor. So being able to communicate, as Jeff said and as Lauren has said, you're not going to get perfect accessibility all the time, but is being able to engage the vendor, making sure that the vendor is going to be responsive, that they can fix it, is absolutely critical. Being able to then have an application for a veteran or disabled person that can actually be used in an emergency is absolutely critical. So usability, accessibility matters when it comes down to the individual. And that's who we're trying to empower here, to make sure that if you're disabled, that you have the same access, comparable access to information and technology that someone who would be non-disabled would have the same access.
I think that's one of the themes even within Microsoft. When people work on accessibility and they're new to it, I've observed that they get really excited about working on it when they understand the human impact that they're having by working on it, as well as the impact that they're having by not working on it. You know, you hear examples of, unfortunately, people losing their jobs because the environment that they were working in didn't set them up for success, and then you really get inspired to fix that environment really, really quickly and urgently. Other ways I've heard businesses think about, you know, getting excited about investing in accessibility, this is again from the same Forrester study. I've heard business managers actually measure things if you want to measure quantitatively, although the qualitative aspect of it, the human life impact, is really the most powerful way to get people inspired. But other ways I've seen businesses think about measuring their investments in accessibility and the impact that they're having is on productivity gains for people, making sure everyone can do things efficiently, whether it's email or accessing websites or just joining meetings, attending meetings. I've also seen some companies measure their talent acquisition and retention strategy. So if you're able to set up your environment for success for everyone, regardless of hearing, vision, reading abilities, or movement abilities, you're able to recruit from a more diverse talent pool, and you're able to retain employees as they age and go through life and maybe have a higher occurrence of disability as they go older. The other thing I've seen organizations do is think about investing in accessibility upfront, because if they don't, they're likely to get sued and have to deal with fines and the repercussion of bolting it on later. So that's one thing that I've seen work for organization. Another type of organization I've seen is a customer-facing organization get excited about being able to get additional customers, because if you can set up a website that's accessible, that website can suddenly be used by so many more people, and that means you get more business. Another thing I've heard someone say is, my support cost actually reduced because I had an accessible website so people could help themselves, and then they didn't have to call my call center. So what are some examples? Do any of these themes reflect on your organizations, or more themes that you've seen helps get that flywheel of investment and accessibility spinning faster?
Well, for me, the productivity of my students increased dramatically. They were able to do even something as simple as participate in a group. Most of the time, these students shrink within themselves in a group setting because they can't read the material. They don't have comparable writing skills. And so they feel that they have no value within a group. Well, when you allow them accessibility, then they're able to be a part of a discussion. They're able to be a part of a project. They're able to do things with others. So not only do you pull in productivity, but you pull in, you know, collaboration. And I think the whole word accessibility, the big thing to remember is that's a human word. There is a human behind the access that you're allowing. So when you're thinking about, you know, is it going to cost money? Is it going to do? Think about the person behind it who needs that. Think about their own frustrations and their own struggles, and really delve into the fact that making something accessible for them has an emotional factor as well as a productivity factor.
At the University of Arizona, we implemented PeopleSoft, and we use it in our HR area as well as for students. And for employees, we were able to allow them to turn on features to make things more accessible. And we found through our work in our office that we needed to do that for students. So we engaged the developers at the university and said, look, we need to try to make this happen. So we worked for quite a long time to implement this. And now, instead of being a very difficult and very tedious process sometimes of knowing how to fill out forms or be able to read data in an accessible way that's presented in tables, for example, now our students are able to be a lot more, you know, successful and efficient, and are able to complete their work as far as getting things done in their academic space. So it's really good, and that's what it's all about, is partnering and working together to solve problems and coming up with solutions.
One of the areas that we've been focused in at the Department of Veterans Affairs has been the migration of information from the PC or the laptop to mobile. And we put together a division within our office, which focuses on mobile applications, ensuring that the mobile applications that are being developed through the VA are applicable to the veterans, but are also accessible to the veterans, whether they're using an iOS or an Android device. So then as a veteran goes into a hospital, rather than having to find the kiosk and find where his appointment's going to be, the veteran will be pushed the notification that welcome to the medical center. The veteran is signed in and then told through his device, his personal device that he may be carrying, that you are to report here and here and here for your tests. So it's being able to push the information to the veteran, making sure that the veteran can access the information if it's on his mobile device, or whether it's a PDF, accessible PDF, or a document, or directions, or that sort of thing. Making sure that the information that we had on a PC or was PC-based is now transferable to your mobile devices. It's an exciting transition. I'm very pleased that we have the same accessibility standards for in the mobile arena that we've had in the PC arena. It kind of gives some of our developers fits, because many times we won't let applications go through that don't meet accessibility standards. Once they've learned how to incorporate accessibility, whether it's on web-based application or mobile applications, it's not that difficult. But it's kind of the changing the mindset that accessibility is part of the business of what we do. It should be something that is baked into the entire federal government. And there's an awful lot of sharing of best practices. We have some at the Department of Veterans Affairs. There are a lot of smart agencies out there that also have very good practices. We don't figure out everything ourselves at the VA. We do an awful lot of sharing. We do an awful lot of stealing of somebody else's checklists or whatever we might need, and we exchange information. And that's how we move forward together as an organization. And I think as a community, to build access, let's share the information and bring everybody up to speed.
I think that's a wonderful segue into the last thing I want to cover with just like a minute left. I want to tell you resources I recommend that you look at, and then I'll ask the panelists to also tell you resources that they want you to look at when you leave this room. So from a Microsoft perspective, I would really like people to just learn a little bit more about Office 365 accessibility, how we're approaching building it in, and the roadmap that we're offering. So we're enhancing it every month, and every month I think people with disabilities in your organization will find it easier to get things done independently, be connected, and do their life's work. You'll also find it easier to create accessible content. The other thing, tomorrow we have a deep dive on just SharePoint accessibility. So if you have developers within your organization that leverage SharePoint, it should be interesting for them to learn how the SharePoint online team approached building SharePoint in an accessible way, and how you can leverage their web paths as you make custom websites, intranet sites within your org. This panel discussion will also be available for you to view on demand and share with others. We have an accessibility website at Microsoft where we aggregate everything that the product teams are doing and share that. There are other resources out here, but I'll let the three panelists tell you when you leave the room, is there something you'd like people to look up or go do in just a few seconds?
I mean, I think Microsoft definitely has the accessibility down. They think about it, they continually update it, and so if you're looking for a product that you already have, think about going to the accessibility site and figuring out what options are available, and that's the easiest place to start.
I would just tell you, as a call to action, to bake accessibility into everything that you do. Make it a part of your culture, from your projects and the developer tools that you pick, to your hiring practices, to ensure that you're inclusive in your hiring, so that everyone gets a chance and to be successful in their work. That's really the key thing, is to make accessibility and usability part of your culture.
And my boss at the Department of Veterans Affairs always says, giddy up, let's go. You've got a lot of people out there that can help you on this journey. Remember who your customer is. Remember that all of your customers are not just able-bodied people. You have customers out there that are disabled, that have needs. There are resources out there to use, and we're happy to give you our best practices and share what we know with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. If anyone has any, and we'll also add the speakers on Twitter when we share out the recording. So if you follow MSFT Enable, we'll get the speakers hooked up to you there in case you think of questions later. Thank you.